Hello, everyone. How you guys doing? Good. I'm really excited to be here tonight. God gave me a really awesome thought over there, and I'll leave you hanging until we get to it. Tonight, you'll notice that something is very, very different. Last week, we had cones on either side of the stage. And we switched the room around. And the reason that we did this was because we were running out of space, which is a really neat problem to have. So we can fit more people in here now, which is really, really neat that geometry works that way. We are in a series on worship and idolatry, modern-day idolatry. When I hear the word idolatry, and we have talked about this, I think about a temple with columns and some kind of altar with some poor, you know, innocent little animal that someone is murdering, right? And it just seems so beyond what I can experience, what I can understand. So I just kind of glance over anytime the Bible says idolatry and think, well, I got that taken care of. There are no temples around where I go and worship, so I'm good to go. And we talked about that what idolatry is, it is worshiping anything that is not God. And so we started with the idea that we are all created with a need inside of us to worship God. And we talked about, well, what is worship? Is worship just an arbitrary list of religious actions that we can do? And we said, no, that is not it. We looked at the life of Jesus and what Jesus said, and he said, hey, what I want is people who will worship me in spirit and in truth. He said, there are people that are worshiping me with their lips, with the things that they're saying, with the actions that they're doing, but their hearts are far from me, and so they worship me in vain. Which is a little bit scary. But then we keyed in on the idea that is so awesome, I love it, is that if we have a heart that is worshipful, then every action that we do becomes worship. When we walk, that's worship. When we talk to one another, that can be worship. When we're driving our cars, that can be worship. When we're eating an amazing Chipotle burrito, that can be worship. I promise you, last night I was eating a Chipotle burrito and I was worshiping God. Here's the thing, the God of the universe, who doesn't need me, decided to make things taste good and allow me to be able to experience that. I love that. And that is worthy of praise right there. And I enjoyed that Chipotle burrito. It's been a while, but it was delightfully delicious, especially after I watched the documentary on Chipotle that said that it's also healthy too. So worship. So we need to worship, and worship is this awesome thing. Then we talked about last week, what is worship exactly? And the idea is that it's just beholding God. That it's beholding God in his fullness, grasping who God is, and then the natural reaction in our hearts that happens when we actually truly behold God. We looked at the book of Revelation, where every knee bows and every tongue confesses that Jesus Christ is Lord. People that believed in Jesus and people that didn't. Because when you behold God, there's only one thing that happens, and it is worship, which I'm excited for that day. And I'm really glad that God has allowed us to behold him right here and now. And so that we can worship God in what we're doing. And then tonight, we're going to talk about two really cool things that worship does. I just want to start out and tell you kind of the story of my life, how my life worked out with idolatry. When I was really young, I had this thing inside that I didn't like. There was this feeling inside that I didn't like one bit. It manifested itself in loneliness sometimes, depression, a lot of different things. But there was this feeling inside that I didn't like. I hated it, and I wanted to change it. I wanted to do whatever I could to change this feeling that I had inside. And so I looked around. And the people that I saw who seemed to have it all together were the popular people. They seemed to not experience any of these feelings that I was feeling. So I thought, they've got it all together. They've got it figured out. I want to be just like them. I want to be popular like they are. And so what I began to do was to worship in the temple of popularity. Now, that sentence sounds strange. I know. Because once again, we're thinking the temple with columns. But here's what I'm talking about. I made popularity my God. I took this idea that if people liked me, if people loved me, if people celebrated me, then it would take care of this feeling. And it would fill this void. And so what I did is I sacrificed everything that I was for this idea of popularity. You see, there were things that I couldn't continue to have if I wanted to be popular. I had a couple friends that didn't help me get popular because they were friends that weren't popular. And so the God of popularity told me to get rid of those friends. And so I did. Even though they were friends and I enjoyed hanging out with them. But because I wanted this, because this would solve my problems, this would change what was going on inside, I was willing to sacrifice that. I had a lot of personal preferences that I enjoyed, certain movies that I liked, comic books that I liked. There were a number of things that I liked that didn't help me get popular. In fact, there were things that people made fun of me for, they didn't like about me, so I thought, I've got to get rid of those things. Even though those were things that I really enjoyed, I changed the way that I viewed sports, the way that I viewed movies, the way that I viewed a ton of things so that I could get this thing, this popularity thing that would change me, that would save me, that would fill this void. My personality, there were a lot of things about my personality that was not popular. My humor, no one got. I just got made fun of, so it wasn't very funny for me, which now it's the other way around, which I don't know what that means. But my personality, I changed it. I conformed it so I could get this thing. Because I looked out there and I looked at these people and I saw who they were and what they were like and what they did and what they said. And the first thing I saw is that they were kind of mean. They were mean to me and they were very exclusive. And so I began to try and conform to that. I kind of became mean. No one here has ever experienced me being mean. So you'll have to imagine, close your eyes and imagine that I could possibly be mean. It's happened once or twice. And so I became mean, I became exclusive. I remember there was this guy named Andy who was legit. He was so popular. And the thing about Andy is he was athletic like you couldn't believe. Like, he was so athletic. He was good at everything. And I thought, or I equated in my little bitty pea-sized brain, that athletics would be the thing. If you were good at athletics, then you would be popular. Okay, just like the song says, you know, make you good at sports, then you'll be popular. And I thought that, and that was before Wicked ever came out, so they need to be paying me royalties. But so I wanted to be popular, so I strived to be good at sports. And I seriously sacrificed a lot for this. I spent every single afternoon after school. I spent Saturday. I spent Sunday training and practicing and getting better and running and jumping rope and running stairs. And I bought these crazy platform shoes that were supposed to increase my vertical 6 inches. It didn't. But there were so many things I did, all my time and my effort that I sacrificed at the temple of popularity so that I could gain this thing that I wanted that would save me, that would fix me. I remember a buddy named Chris, and everybody loved Chris. And the thing about Chris is he was hilarious. He had a great sense of humor. He had a really quick wit, and everybody loved him. So I was like, humor's the deal. So I started going after humor. I would say everything that Chris would say. I would act exactly like Chris would act. I became like a Chris clone. And the interesting thing is when I would talk like Chris, people would laugh, and they would like me more. And when I became good at sports, people would like me more. And I began to feel like, okay, this is working. This is what I need to do. But I always needed more. I idolized a guy named Zach Morris. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Zach Morris. He was on Saved by the Bell, and Zach Morris had it all. He really did. And I knew it was fake, but for some reason I equated it with reality that if I could act and look and talk just like Zach, then I would be popular. And so I remember one time, there's something about Zach. Zach had a real great disrespect for authority and teachers. And I'm really even ashamed to tell you this story, but here's what I did. I don't know if you can see this or not, but one time I was sitting in English class with, I think it was Miss Siegel. And we had something that we had written out that she wanted us to share. And I didn't want to share, and she called on me to share, and I was like, ugh. So I stood up, because I had to stand up, and I had my foot on the chair, and I started reading whatever it was. And she said, Brady, get your foot off the chair. And so I did this. And then I just kept reading. And because I thought that was so cool. I thought I was defying the teacher. That is so cool. Everyone's going to love me for that. I was an idiot. I mean, I was just a jerk. I was a complete and utter jerk. There was these guys that I looked at that would do anything. You know who I'm talking about. They would, you know, anytime you bet them they wouldn't do it, they would do it. And they'd always take things to the next level. So I began doing some of those things because anything that I could do, anything that I could change to get this idea of popularity so it would fill me, I wanted it. And what I began to realize, though, is as I got it, as I obtained it, I just needed more. I just needed more and more and more. And what I began to look at least now, and when I look back on it, is my life became completely different than it was before. I became conformed to the image of all these things that I wanted, all these people that I idolized. And I had no idea who I was anymore. I was this thing that had, you know, morphed into whatever I thought people would like, what people would want, and I was no longer myself. And even having this stuff, it didn't fill me anymore. And what I discovered is that throughout my journey of trying to seek after popularity, whenever I had it, I didn't need God, and I didn't want God, and I didn't pursue after God because I had what I wanted. There were a lot of times when my story went, you know, up and down. There were times when, you know, I had success and there were times when I didn't. There were times when I had friends and times that I didn't. And in those times that I didn't, I drew near to God. But as soon as I got the popularity that I wanted, the things that I wanted, I left him behind because I didn't want God for God. I wanted God to give me this thing that I wanted. And that was the life that I lived. This was my journey, I mean, throughout college. And the thing that was crazy is when I finally had it, when I finally kind of looked back and I had a certain amount of fame, a certain amount of success, a certain amount of popularity, I realized that it didn't do what I wanted it to do. I realized that I felt exactly the same way that I did, I don't know, 10, 15 years before when I looked up at popularity and said, this is the thing that would fill me. This is the thing that would give me what I want, would answer my heart's desire. And I didn't have it. And there's this idea that my brother shared with me. He said that the worst thing in the world isn't not getting everything that you want. He said it's much worse to get everything that you want and realize it doesn't satisfy, that it doesn't fill you. There's an old saying, I climbed to the top of my ladder and behold, it was leaning against the wrong building. I spent so much of my life, so much of my effort, so much of my emotions, so much of my time trying to get this thing that I thought would fill me, that I thought would satisfy me, that I thought would take care of the feelings inside that I hated. And when I finally got there, I felt exactly the same way. And it was really depressing. It was really frustrating. The thing is that we all do this in some way, shape, or form. There are a number of things that we worship in our society. For instance, efficiency. Efficiency is something that we hold up as something that we should all strive to. And what I find is that we've all become extremely efficient. We weigh tasks above people a lot. And so if we have a task that needs to get done, we'll run over people in the process to get it done. Or we'll discard people if they're not helpful in us getting the thing done that we want to get done in an efficient manner. My wife and I call it task mode. She and I both have this tendency. And so when we see the other person, you can see it in their face, you can see it in their actions, the way they speak. If they're in task mode, you want to leave them alone. Right? If my wife is ever in task mode, I don't want to ask her questions. I just want to maybe scratch her back, but be ready to move just in case she needs to move and get a task done. Same with me. I'm the same way. Task mode, you watch out because you're just getting in my way because the task is more important. I have this thing with the dishwasher. There's a proper way to load the dishwasher. And there's two reasons why there's a proper way to load the dishwasher. The first reason is if you load it properly, you can fit more things in the dishwasher, right? Which saves on money on the soap that you buy. It saves on water. So it's a really good thing to load it properly. The second thing is when you load it properly, it's much easier to unload. It's much quicker to unload. I'm the only one who knows how to load the dishwasher properly. And a lot of people come over to my house and they load it improperly. And I tell you what, sometimes I struggle with that. I really do. It sounds really stupid, but I struggle because people are making it inefficient for me to unload the dishwasher, which I'm the one who does that most of the time. Because I'm a pastor and I don't really have a job. It's like a fake job. Really? That's not funny. No, it is, because that's not true. I work really hard. But do you see what I'm kind of saying? Is what happens in our world, we've held up this thing, efficiency. And it begins to change who we are, and people get the brunt of that. We worship emotions. How many times have feelings gotten the trump card? Anytime you do anything, whether it's good or bad, and your intentions are pure or not, but it hurts someone's feelings, you're wrong, you're in trouble. But that hurt my feelings. What? I gave you $100. How did that hurt your feelings? It just hurt my feelings. So you have to apologize. I mean, fleet feelings have begun to be held up in our society. We hold up feelings above commitment. Okay, if I feel in love with you, then we can commit to each other. But as soon as I feel out of love with you, then it's over, right? The commitment isn't important. The feeling is what's important. So if we fall out of love, then we'll split up or we'll separate or we'll divorce or whatever. Because feeling is the thing that we hold up. And it changes who we are. We worship physical beauty. How many hours are spent in the weight room? How many hours are spent figuring out a diet and not eating that amazing food that God created for us to enjoy? Yeah, right? But we do this. We sacrifice our taste buds because of physical beauty. And we get implants and we do Botox and we do liposuction and whatever else is required to get this physical beauty that we have held up. And then we begin to hold other people to the exact same standard of this physical beauty that we have. And what I found is all of this stuff that we worship, most of it isn't bad stuff. It's not bad. But it's stuff that was never meant to replace God, because it cannot fill the void. It cannot change the feelings that we have inside that we don't like. It can only numb it for a little while. It's crazy the way that we do this. There's only one being in the entire world that can sustain the weight of worship, and that is God. And he's also the only being that in worship can reciprocate the fullness of joy that should happen when we worship. I love this about God. But the problem is, for most of us, is 99% of us, we don't get to the top of our ladder. And most of us don't get to the end of what it is that we're pursuing after. Most of the time, there's more money that we can gain, there's more fame that we can gain, there's more success that we can gain, there's more popularity, there's more of something that we can gain. So we keep running after it like we're a rat on a treadmill, and we never find out that, whoa, this isn't going to satisfy. And so we keep running after our entire lives unless we look at the example of other people. And it's amazing. You look at the people that have achieved these things, and so many of them say, it does not satisfy. It doesn't fill. Over and over again. And we watched a video with Tom Brady, who had just won a couple Super Bowls and was the MVP of the Super Bowl. He had reached the pinnacle of his career in football, had achieved everything he could have wanted. He said, I want more. This can't be all there is. You hear it with musicians that have become successful in the songs that they write, that there's got to be more than this semi-charm kind of life. I mean, for real. I mean, these are guys that have it all. That have all the money they want, they have all the women they want, they have all the fame that they could want, and they say, there's got to be more. I need more. And yet we still continue to pursue after this. We still continue to worship this. My thought when I was thinking through all this was Ohana. Yeah, come on. Ohana, it means family. So close. It means family, and family means no one gets left behind. But I'm talking about Ohana, the restaurant, okay? Okay, this is absolutely, hands down, my favorite restaurant on Disney property. Hands down. It's unbelievable. I still remember my first time I went there. But the problem is no one told me the proper way to eat at Ohana's, okay? Here's the thing. Ohana has great food, and they start off with this bread that is just, come on now. They start with this bread that is to die for. And then you get this salad that is a salad that actually tastes good. And then you've got pasta. And then you've got the warm-up meat. And then you've got the steak and the chicken and the shrimp. And then, pineapple bread pudding with bananas Foster sauce topped with a little vanilla bean ice cream. Now, when I went to Ohana for the first time, no one prepared me. And so I ate a lot of that delicious bread. I don't know, yeah, so we got some vets here. They know what I'm talking about. Because I ate the bread and I started to get full. Well, then I had to try the pasta and I had to try the salad. I didn't try the salad. I had to try the warm-up meats, and then it came to this chicken and the steak and the shrimp. I couldn't eat very much because I was already so full. And then when they brought out the glorious pinnacle of the meal at Ohana, I could only have a couple bites, and I was just stuffing myself. I was in pain. I was in pain for a couple hours afterwards. It wasn't gluttony. It was something else, because we don't believe in that here. But I know now, you don't fill up on the bread at Ohana. You save that and you take that home with you, right? Because they give you as much as you want, you just put it in your bag. Because if you do that, then you don't eat the steak and the chicken, and you don't eat the delightful, amazing, decadent dessert that they have for you at the end, which you cannot take home. See, that's how you eat at Ohana. I think about out there, I was looking and we have Cheetos, and Cheetos' cousin is Cheese Puffs. Have you guys ever eaten Cheese Puffs? Cheese Puffs is an amazing thing. It's a magical food that you put it in your mouth and it evaporates. It's gone immediately. Some magician invented Cheetos. But what happens with Cheetos, they have some ingredient in Cheetos. I don't know what it is. It probably is cancer causing. But some ingredient that makes you want more. After you've had about 5 cheese puffs, you don't want a steak. You want more cheese puffs, even though you haven't been filled up at all. And when you get down to the bottom of the bag of cheese puffs, the only thing you have is a stomach ache and a craving for more cheese puffs, right? Not steak, more cheese puffs. It's an amazing thing. But this is the way it is with worship. You see, what we do is we feast on all these things, all this stuff that we think that will fill us, that we think will satisfy us, and we're not hungry for what is truly satisfying. I mean, I think about God as this amazing table full of the most amazing Ohana food you can imagine, and we spoil our appetite, and so we don't even want to go to the table. We don't even want to approach it because you can't even think about eating something else because you're sick to your stomach on, you know, yellow 5 and whatever else that you've eaten and putting into your body, right? You don't even want to approach it. And if you do, you're only going to sample it. And this is the way it is with idolatry and worship, is we are so intent on worshiping and trying to satisfy and sacrifice in our lives for these things that will not fill, that will not satisfy, that we don't even approach the table of God. And the solution is worship. The solution is to behold God. We talked about how beholding God, that's what worship is. And when you truly, fully behold God, the thing that happens inside of you, that's what makes everything you do worshipful. And there are these two amazing things that happen to us when we worship, when we behold Jesus. In James chapter 4, verse 8, it says, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you." Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. In Psalms chapter 17, verse 15, David says, "As for me, I shall behold your face in righteousness. When I wake, I shall be satisfied with your likeness." David was a man after God's own heart. And David literally wrote the book on worship. He wrote most of the Psalms that we have. And David was all about beholding God. And what that did is it drew him to want God more. He says, as the deer pants after the water, so my soul longs for you. God, you are glorious. You are great. And David found that in the good times and in the bad times, in the happy times and the difficult times, it didn't matter what was going on. He wanted to draw near to God because God was the only being that would satisfy the longing in his heart through worship. And this thought begins to blow my mind. The God of the universe, the creator and the sustainer of the universe, desires to have intimacy with us. He desires to have a relationship with you, with me. There's a television show that is off the air now called The Office. Any Office fans in here? There's this episode called, I think it's called Dwight's Speech, where Dwight Schrute, who's one of the characters in The Office, he wins the Paper Salesman of the Year Award, and he gets to give this speech. Now, Dwight's boss, Michael, loves the spotlight, loves getting attention, okay? And so he takes Dwight to go give the speech, and he knows Dwight's going to fail at it because Dwight is, he's really kind of an idiot a lot. Like, they've written him to be that. And so they go to this deal, and there are 1,000 paper salesmen there ready to hear Dwight's speech. And Dwight begins to give his speech. And people are captivated by his speech. They begin to cheer. They begin to clap. They're going crazy. They're repeating what he asked them to repeat. It's crazy. And Michael, who wants the spotlight, he leaves. Because he can't take it. He can't take it. Someone else has the spotlight. And so he goes to the bar, and he drinks water because we're at church. And he goes to the bar, and he's out there, and then Dwight comes to find him after the speech is done. And he says, where were you? He said, I got thirsty. And he said, I go. And Dwight was like, it was amazing. It was awesome. And then Michael begins telling Dwight these stories and gets Dwight to laugh and stuff. And at the end, Michael says, I captivated the guy who captivated 1,000 guys. 1,000 guys. Can you believe that? Talk about how great he was. But isn't this the way that we are? How much do we want to be near or connected to someone who has great prestige? Right? I think the best example for me is K-Fed, right? Kevin Federline, he was a dancer for Britney Spears. And you know, dancers are phenomenal. I mean, they've got like great talent. I imagine he had phenomenal talent to be on that stage. But normally, the people in the background get overlooked. But everybody knew Kevin Federline's name because he started dating, and I think they actually got married, to Britney Spears. Which, I mean, Britney Spears, I mean, she was you know, a pop idol, a pop icon. And so K-Fed was getting all kind of you know, fame from just being connected to Britney Spears. How often do we want to do this? I think about this with my wife. And here's what I thought just a second ago. My wife, she's amazing. I mean, she just is amazing. And if I could tell sixth grade Brady, if I could bring sixth grade Brady a picture of my wife, tell him, hey, you're going to marry this girl. Okay, she sings like an angel. She's hilarious. I'm not going to tell you she's going to be funnier than you, but she is. She's so wise. She loves people so extravagantly. She celebrates people so well. If I had brought this picture to sixth grade Brady, he'd have wet his pants. He wouldn't have believed me because sixth grade Brady, he was so unpopular. He didn't have friends. He had this hole inside that he wanted to fill. And we looked at these people that were popular. He looked at these people that were beautiful. He looked at all these people. He desperately wanted it. And if he had any clue that he would get to be connected to her, he wouldn't have believed it. And I think about me and the God of the universe. I think about me and all of my failures. And all the ways that I have fallen, all the ways that I've messed up, all the ways that I've made myself an enemy of God. I look at the way that actually I have nothing glorious to offer God. And yet God, my wife is awesome, okay? But compared to the God of the universe, there's no comparison. that the God of the universe wants to have an intimate relationship with me and with each and every single one of you. That we have the opportunity to be connected to the God of the universe, and we connected more intimately to him through worship. That if we behold God, we are drawn nearer to God and he draws nearer to us. And it doesn't stop there. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 2, it says, "Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is." When we behold God, we begin to be like God. Check this out, 2 Corinthians 3:18. "And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another." That we, as we behold God, as we look at God, as we're in awe of God, as we begin to grasp who he is, as we remember who he is and what he's done, we begin to be transformed into his image. We not only get the opportunity to be in relationship with God through worship, but through worship, we get to become like God. I think about myself back in sixth grade again, thinking that I at one point get to be like Jesus. I mean, if you look at the life of Jesus, there's no one like Jesus. There is no one like Jesus. The way that he lived, the way that he spoke, the way that he loved people. How patient he was with his disciples who didn't get it over and over and over again. How kind he was to the people that were outcast. The people that no one liked, the people that no one wanted to be around. The prostitutes, the tax collectors, the sinners. The way that he endured all things for us. The way that he was beaten, he was spit upon, and he was cursed. And he was tortured to death for us. And I think about a man like that. I think about a God like that. And the thought that I am being transformed into his image. I, through worship, get to draw near to God, and I'm going to look like God, more and more like God, as I worship God. It blows my mind. I think about sixth grade Brady and the predicament he was in and what he longed for and what he hoped for to realize what has happened now, not just with the great wife that I have, but the relationship with God that I get to have and I get to experience. When we worship other things, when we are committing idolatry, we are being drawn away from God and we're being conformed to this image, this small image, this shadow of what we were meant to be, this shadow of what we can be. And as we worship God, we are drawn near to him, into relationship with him. We are called the bride of Christ. The church is called the bride of Christ. You can't get a more intimate picture than that, than husband and bride with God. That when we worship God, it draws us near to him and it makes us like him. The idea is that we would just behold God. It's not complex, it's simple. It's not complicated, it's simple. What we do is we behold God. We see who he is like we did last week. Look at his glory and his might and his holiness like it's in the Old Testament in Revelation. And look at the amazing love of Jesus like we see in the Gospels and how the letters talk about him as they point back to him. In 2 Peter, it talks about Jesus. It says that he paved the way for us so that we could follow in his footsteps. It says he committed no sin, neither was any deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, when he was cursed, when he was mocked, he didn't revile in return. And when he suffered unfairly, unjustly for us, he didn't threaten, but he continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He says he took our sins upon himself in his body and bore them on the tree so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds, by Jesus' wounds, we've been healed. And when we behold God like that, and we realize that he made the way for us, that is not our righteous acts, and that he loves us, not because we're awesome, but because he's awesome, not because of our great righteousness, but in spite of our lack of righteousness, that we get to be with God and we get to be like God just by beholding him in all of his fullness, in all of his majesty, in all of his might, in all of his glory, his love, his mercy. And I am blown away. That me, of all people, that I get to be with God, that I get to be connected to God, and that he is now currently transforming me into his image so that I would look like him as well. We're going to get the opportunity right now to continue singing his praise. And what else could we do when we behold God, but to sing out with all of our might that you took me, a sinner, someone who was rejected, someone who people considered worthless, and you considered me worthy of love, so much so that you pursued after me and you died for me and you're continuing to pursue after me, desiring an intimate relationship with me, just like every one of you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, God, wow. You are awesome. God, you are amazing. Lord, I pray that you would help us to remember who it is that we were before we met you. Help us to remember that we were sinners, rejected, on a path leading to death. And now in you, because of you, we are now the righteousness of Jesus, and that you are transforming us from one degree of glory to the other into the image of your Son. Thank you so much that you love us, that you desire a relationship with us. Father, I pray that we would be eternally grateful, that we would remember who we were, and we would remember who you are, and we would realize that you are here right now, and we get the opportunity to praise your name for it. Fill our hearts with your worship and with your praise, so that you might be magnified in the things that we sing right now. And it is in your Son's amazing, beautiful name, Jesus Christ, that we pray.